the meantime was not appealing. Suppose I got depressed again, even with Jake. I had to keep occupied. Maybe there was some other way, some other recipe, some other place. The house had been a mistake, certainly, but his presence must be stamped somewhere, somewhere other than inside me. There had to be a place where he seemed more real than among all the familiar landmarks that were crowded with other human memories. I could think of one place where that might hold true. One place that would always belong to him and no one else. A magic place, full of light. The beautiful meadow I'd seen only once in my life, lit by sunshine and the sparkle of his skin. This idea had a huge potential for backfiring. It might be dangerously painful. My chest ached with emptiness even to think of it. It was hard to hold myself upright, to not give myself away. But surely, there of all places, I could hear his voice. And I'd already told Charlie I was hiking. "What are you thinking about so hard?" Jacob asked. "Well," I began slowly, "I found this place in the forest once. I came across it when I was, hiking. A little meadow, the most beautiful place. I don't know if I could track it down again on my own. It would definitely take a few tries. We could use a compass and a grid pattern," Jacob said with confident helpfulness. "Do you know where you started from?" "Yes, just below the trailhead where the 110 ends. I was going mostly south, I think." "Cool, we'll find it." As always, Jacob was game for anything I wanted, no matter how strange it was. So, Saturday afternoon, I tied on my new hiking boots, purchased that morning using my 20% off employee discount for the first time, grabbed my new topographical map of the Olympic Peninsula, and drove to La Push. We didn't get started immediately. First, Jacob sprawled across the living room floor, taking up the whole room, and for a full 20 minutes, drew a complicated web across the key section of the map while I perched on a kitchen chair and talked to Billy. Billy didn't seem at all concerned about our proposed hiking trip. I was surprised that Jacob had told him where we were going, given the fuss people were making about the bear sightings. I wanted to ask Billy not to say anything about this to Charlie, but I was afraid that making the request would cause the opposite result. "Maybe we'll see the super bear," Jacob joked, eyes on his design. I glanced at Billy swiftly, fearing a Charlie-style reaction, but Billy just laughed at his son. "Maybe you should take a jar of honey, just in case," Jake chuckled. "Hope your new boots are fast, Bella. One little jar isn't going to keep a hungry bear occupied for long." "I only have to be faster than you. Good luck with that," Jacob said, rolling his eyes as he refolded the map. "Let's go." "Have fun," Billy rumbled, wheeling himself toward the refrigerator. Charlie was not a hard person to live with, but it looked to me like Jacob had it even easier than I did. I drove to the very end of the dirt road, stopping near the sign that marked the beginning of the trailhead. It had been a long time since I'd been here, and my stomach reacted nervously. This might be a very bad thing, but it would be worth it if I got to hear him. I got out and looked at the dense wall of green. "I went this way," I murmured, pointing straight ahead. "Hmm," Jake muttered. "What?" He looked at the direction I'd pointed, then at the clearly marked trail and back. "I would have figured you for a trail kind of girl." "Not me," I smiled bleakly. "I'm a rebel." He laughed and then pulled out our map. "Give me a second." He held the compass in a skilled way, twisting the map around till it angled the way he wanted. "Okay, first line on the grid. Let's do it." I could tell that I was slowing Jacob up, but he didn't complain. I tried not to dwell on my last trip through this part of the forest with a very different companion. Normal memories were still dangerous. If I let myself slip up, I'd end up with my arms clutching my chest to hold it together, gasping for air. And how would I explain that to Jacob? It wasn't as hard as I would have thought to keep focused on the present. The forest looked a lot like any other part of the peninsula, and Jacob set a vastly different mood. He whistled cheerfully, an unfamiliar tune, swinging his arms and moving easily through the rough undergrowth. The shadows didn't seem as dark as usual, not with my personal sun along. Jacob checked the compass every few minutes, keeping us in a straight line with one of the radiating spokes of his grid. He really looked like he knew what he was doing. I was going to compliment him, but I caught myself. No doubt he'd add another few years to his inflated age. My mind wandered as I walked, and I grew curious. I hadn't forgotten the conversation we'd had by the sea cliffs. I'd been waiting for him to bring it up again, but it didn't look like that was going to happen. "Hey, Jake?" I asked hesitantly. "Yeah?" "How are things with Embry? Is he back to normal yet?" Jacob was silent for a minute, still moving forward with long paces. When he was about 10 feet ahead, he stopped to wait for me. "No, he's not back to normal," Jacob said when I reached him, his mouth pulling down at the corners. He didn't start walking again. I immediately regretted bringing it up. "Still with Sam?" "Yup." He put his arm around my shoulder, and he looked so troubled that I didn't playfully shake it off as I might have otherwise. "Are they still looking at you funny?" I half-whispered. Jacob stared through the trees. "Sometimes." "And Billy?" "As helpful as ever," he said in a sour, angry voice that disturbed me. "Our couch is always open," I offered. He laughed, breaking out of the unnatural gloom. "But think of the position that would put Charlie in when Billy calls the police to report my kidnapping." I laughed too, glad to have Jacob back to normal. We stopped when Jacob said we'd gone 6 miles, cut west for a short time, and headed back along another line of his grid. Everything looked exactly the same as the way in, and I had a feeling that my silly quest was pretty much doomed. I admitted as much when it started to get darker, the sunless day fading toward a starless night. But Jacob was more confident. "As long as you're sure we're starting from the right place," he glanced down at me. "Yes, I'm sure." "Then we'll find it," he promised, grabbing my hand and pulling me through a mass of ferns. On the other side was the truck. He gestured toward it proudly. "Trust me." "You're good," I admitted. "Next time we bring flashlights, though. We'll save hiking for Sundays from now on. I didn't know you were that slow." I yanked my hand back and stomped around to the driver's side while he chuckled at my reaction. "So you up for another try tomorrow?" he asked, sliding into the passenger seat. "Sure, unless you want to go without me so I don't tie you down to my gimpy pace." "I'll survive," he assured me. "If we're hiking again, though, you might want to pick up some moleskin. I bet you can feel those new boots right now." "A little," I confessed. It felt like I had more blisters than I had space to fit them. "I hope we see the bear tomorrow. I'm sort of disappointed about that." "Yes, me too," I agreed sarcastically. "Maybe we'll get lucky tomorrow and something will eat us." "Bears don't want to eat people. We don't taste that good," he grinned at me in the dark cab. "Of course, you might be an exception. I bet you taste good." "Thanks so much," I said, looking away. He wasn't the first person to tell me that. Chapter 9, Third Wheel. Time began to trip along much more quickly than before. School, work, and Jacob, though not necessarily in that order, created a neat and effortless pattern to follow. And Charlie got his wish. I wasn't miserable anymore. Of course, I couldn't fool myself completely. When I stopped to take stock of my life, which I tried not to do too often, I couldn't ignore the implications of my behavior. I was like a lost moon, my planet destroyed in some cataclysmic disaster movie scenario of desolation that continued nevertheless to circle in a tight little orbit around the empty space left behind, ignoring the laws of gravity. I was getting better with my bike, which meant fewer bandages to worry Charlie. But it also meant that the voice in my head began to fade, until I heard it no more. Quietly, I panicked. I threw myself into the search for the meadow with slightly frenzied intensity. I racked my brain for other adrenaline-producing activities. I didn't keep track of the days that passed. There was no reason. As I tried to live as much in the present as possible, no past fading, no future impending. So I was surprised by the date when Jacob brought it up on one of our homework days. He was waiting when I pulled up in front of his house. "Happy Valentine's Day," Jacob said, smiling but ducking his head as he greeted me. He held out a small pink box, balancing it on his palm. Conversation hearts. "Well, I feel like a schmuck," I mumbled. "Is today Valentine's Day?" Jacob shook his head with mock sadness. "You can be so out of it sometimes. Yes, it is the 14th day of February. So are you going to be my Valentine? Since you didn't get me a 50-cent box of candy, it's the least you can do." I started to feel uncomfortable. The words were teasing, but only on the surface. "What exactly does that entail?" I hedged. "The usual. Slave for life, that kind of thing." "Oh, well, if that's all," I took the candy. But I was trying to think of some way to make the boundaries clear. Again, they seemed to get blurred a lot with Jacob. "So, what are we doing tomorrow? Hiking or the ER?" "Hiking," I decided. "You're not the only one who can be obsessive. I'm starting to think I imagined that place." I frowned into space. "We'll find it," he assured me. "Bikes Friday?" he offered. I saw a chance and took it without taking time to think it through. "I'm going to a movie Friday. I've been promising my cafeteria crowd that I would go out forever. Mike would be pleased." But Jacob's face fell. I caught the expression in his dark eyes before he dropped them to look at the ground. "You'll come too, right?" I added quickly. "Or will it be too much of a drag with a bunch of boring seniors?" So much for my chance to put some distance between us. I couldn't stand hurting Jacob. We seemed to be connected in an odd way, and his pain set off little stabs of my own. Also, the idea of having his company for the ordeal. I had promised Mike, but really didn't feel any enthusiasm at the thought of following through. It was just too tempting. "You'd like me to come with your friends there?" "Yes," I admitted honestly, knowing as I continued that I was probably shooting myself in the foot with my words. "I'll have a lot more fun if you're there. Bring Quill and we'll make it a party." "Quill's gonna freak. Senior girls," he chortled and rolled his eyes. I didn't mention Embry, and neither did he. I laughed too. "I'll try to get him a good selection." I broached the subject with Mike in English. "Hey, Mike," I said when class was over, "are you free Friday night?" He looked up, his blue eyes instantly hopeful. "Yeah, I am. You want to go out?" I worded my reply carefully. "I was thinking about getting a group," I emphasized the word, "together to go see Crosshairs." I'd done my homework this time, even reading the movie spoilers to be sure I wouldn't be caught off guard. This movie was supposed to be a bloodbath from start to finish. I wasn't so recovered that I could stand to sit through a romance. "Does that sound like fun?" "Sure," he agreed, visibly less eager. "Cool." After a second, he perked back up to near his former excitement level. "How about we get Angela and Ben? Or Eric and Katie?" He was determined to make this some kind of double date, apparently. "How about both?" I suggested. "And Jessica too, of course. And Tyler and Connor? And maybe Lauren," I tacked on grudgingly. I had promised Quill variety. "Okay," Mike muttered, foiled. "And," I continued, "I've got a couple friends from La Push I'm inviting. So it sounds like we'll need your Suburban if everyone comes." Mike's eyes narrowed in suspicion. "These are the friends you spend all your time studying with now?" "Yep, the very ones," I answered cheerfully. "Though you could look at it as tutoring. They're only sophomores." "Oh," Mike said, surprised. After a second of thought, he smiled. In the end, though, the Suburban wasn't necessary. Jessica and Lauren claimed to be busy as soon as Mike let it slip that I was involved in the planning. Eric and Katie already had plans. It was their 3-week anniversary or something. Lauren got to Tyler and Connor before Mike could, so those two were also busy. Even Quill was out, grounded for fighting at school. In the end, only Angela and Ben, and of course Jacob, were able to go. The diminished numbers didn't dampen Mike's anticipation, though. It was all he could talk about Friday. "Are you sure you don't want to see Tomorrow and Forever instead?" he asked at lunch, naming the current romantic comedy that was ruling the box office. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a better review. "I want to see Crosshairs," I insisted. "I'm in the mood for action. Bring on the blood and guts." "Okay." Mike turned away, but not before I saw his "maybe she's crazy after all" expression. When I got home from school, a very familiar car was parked in front of my house. Jacob was leaning against the hood, a huge grin lighting up his face. "No way!" I shouted as I jumped out of the truck. "You're done? I can't believe it! You finished the rabbit!" He beamed. "Just last night. This is the maiden voyage." "Incredible!" I held my hand up for a high five. He smacked his hand against mine but left it there, twisting his fingers through mine. "So, do I get to drive tonight?" "Definitely," I said, and then I sighed. "What's wrong?" "I'm giving up. I can't top this one." "So you win. You're oldest." He shrugged, unsurprised by my capitulation. "Of course I am." Mike's Suburban chugged around the corner. I pulled my hand out of Jacob's, and he made a face that I wasn't meant to see. "I remember this guy," he said in a low voice as Mike parked across the street. "The one who thought you were his girlfriend. Is he still confused?" I raised one eyebrow. "Some people are hard to discourage." "Then again," Jacob said thoughtfully, "sometimes persistence pays off. Most of the time it's just annoying, though." Mike got out of his car and crossed the road. "Hey, Bella," he greeted me, and then his eyes turned wary as he looked up at Jacob. I glanced briefly at Jacob, too, trying to be objective. He really didn't look like a sophomore at all. He was just so big. Mike's head barely cleared Jacob's shoulder. I didn't even want to think where I measured next to him. And then his face was older looking than it used to be, even a month ago. "Hey, Mike, do you remember Jacob Black?" "Not really," Mike held out his hand. "Old family friend," Jacob introduced himself, shaking hands. They locked hands with more force than necessary. When their grip broke, Mike flexed his fingers. I heard the phone ringing from the kitchen. "I'd better get that. It might be Charlie," I told them and dashed inside. It was Ben. Angela was sick with the stomach flu, and he didn't feel like coming without her. He apologized for bailing on us. I walked slowly back to the waiting boys, shaking my head. I really hoped Angela would feel better soon, but I had to admit that I was selfishly upset by this development. Just the three of us, Mike and Jacob and me, together for the evening. This had worked out brilliantly, I thought with grim sarcasm. It didn't seem like Jake and Mike had made any progress toward friendship in my absence. They were several yards apart, facing away from each other as they waited for me. Mike's expression was sullen, though Jacob's was cheerful as always. "Ange is sick," I told them glumly. "She and Ben aren't coming." "I guess the flu is making another round. Austin and Connor were out today, too." "Maybe we should do this another time," Mike suggested. Before I could agree, Jacob spoke. "I'm still up for it, but if you'd rather stay behind, Mike..." "No, I'm coming," Mike interrupted. "I was just thinking of Angela and Ben. Let's go." He started toward his Suburban. "Hey, do you mind if Jacob drives?" I asked. I told him he could. He'd just finished his car. He built it from scratch, all by himself, I bragged, proud as a PTA mom with a student on the principal's list. "Fine," Mike snapped. "All right, then," Jacob said, as if that settled everything. He seemed more comfortable than anyone else. Mike climbed in the back seat of the rabbit with a disgusted expression. Jacob was his normal sunny self, chattering away until I had all but forgotten Mike sulking silently in the back. And then Mike changed his strategy. He leaned forward, resting his chin on the shoulder of my seat. His cheek almost touched mine. I shifted away, turning my back toward the window. "Doesn't the radio work in this thing?" Mike asked with a hint of petulance, interrupting Jacob mid-sentence. "Yes," Jacob answered, "but Bella doesn't like music." I stared at Jacob, surprised. I'd never told him that. "Bella?" Mike asked, annoyed. "He's right," I mumbled, still looking at Jacob's serene profile. "How can you not like music?" Mike demanded. I shrugged. "I don't know. It just irritates me." "Hmph," Mike leaned away. When we got to the theater, Jacob handed me a $10 bill. "What's this?" I objected. "I'm not old enough to get into this one," he reminded me. I laughed out loud. "So much for relative ages. Is Billy going to kill me if I sneak you in?" "No. I told him you were planning to corrupt my youthful innocence." I snickered, and Mike quickened his pace to keep up with us. I almost wished that Mike had decided to bow out. He was still sullen, not much of an addition to the party. But I didn't want to end up on a date alone with Jacob either. That wouldn't help anything. The movie was exactly what it professed to be. In just the opening credits, four people got blown up and one got beheaded. The girl in front of me put her hands over her eyes and turned her face into her date's chest. He patted her shoulder and winced occasionally, too. Mike didn't look like he was watching. His face was stiff as he glared toward the fringe of curtain above the screen. I settled in to endure the 2 hours, watching the colors and the movement on the screen rather than seeing the shapes of people and cars and houses. But then Jacob started sniggering. "What?" I whispered. "Oh, come on," he hissed back. "The blood squirted 20 feet out of that guy. How fake can you get?" He chuckled again as a flagpole speared another man into a concrete wall. After that, I really watched the show, laughing with him as the mayhem got more and more ridiculous. How was I ever going to fight the blurring lines in our relationship when I enjoyed being with him so much? Both Jacob and Mike had claimed the armrests on either side of me. Both of their hands rested lightly, palms up, in an unnatural-looking position, like steel bear traps, open and ready. Jacob was in the habit of taking my hand whenever the opportunity presented itself. But here in the darkened movie theater, with Mike watching, it would have a different significance, and I was sure he knew that. I couldn't believe that Mike was thinking the same thing, but his hand was placed exactly like Jacob's. I folded my arms tightly across my chest and hoped that both their hands fell asleep. Mike gave up first. About halfway through the movie, he pulled his arm back and leaned forward to put his head in his hands. At first I thought he was reacting to something on the screen, but then he moaned. "Mike, are you okay?" I whispered. The couple in front of us turned to look at him as he groaned again. "No," he gasped. "I think I'm sick." I could see the sheen of sweat across his face in the light from the screen. Mike groaned again and bolted for the door. I got up to follow him and Jacob copied me immediately. "No, stay," I whispered. "I'll make sure he's okay." Jacob came with me anyway. "You don't have to come. Get your $8 worth of carnage," I insisted as we walked up the aisle. "That's okay. You sure can pick them, Bella. This movie really sucks." His voice rose from a whisper to its normal pitch as we walked out of the theater. There was no sign of Mike in the hallway, and I was glad then that Jacob had come with me. He ducked into the men's bathroom to check for him there. Jacob was back in a few seconds. "Oh, he's in there all right," he said, rolling his eyes. "What a marshmallow. You should hold out for someone with a stronger stomach. Someone who laughs at the gore that makes weaker men vomit." "I'll keep my eyes open for someone like that." We were all alone in the hallway. Both theaters were halfway through the movie, and it was deserted, quiet enough for us to hear the popcorn popping at the concession counter in the lobby. Jacob went to sit on the velveteen upholstered bench against the wall, patting the space beside him. "He sounded like he was going to be in there for a while," he said, stretching his long legs out in front of him as he settled into wait. I joined him with a sigh. He looked like he was thinking about blurring more lines. Sure enough, as soon as I sat down, he shifted over to put his arm around my shoulders. "Jake," I protested, leaning away. He dropped his arm, not looking bothered at all by the minor rejection. He reached out and took my hand firmly, wrapping his other hand around my wrist when I tried to pull away again. Where did he get the confidence from? "Now just hold on a minute, Bella," he said in a calm voice. "Tell me something." I grimaced. I didn't want to do this. Not just not now, but not ever. There was nothing left in my life at this point that was more important than Jacob Black. But he seemed determined to ruin everything. "What?" I muttered sourly. "You like me, right? You know I do. Better than that joker puking his guts out in there." He gestured toward the bathroom door. "Yes," I sighed. "Better than any of the other guys you know." He was calm, serene, as if my answer didn't matter, or he already knew what it was. "Better than the girls, too," I pointed out. "But that's all," he said, and it wasn't a question. It was hard to answer, to say the word. Would he get hurt and avoid me? How would I stand that? "Yes," I whispered. He grinned down at me. "That's okay, you know. As long as you like me the best. And you think I'm good-looking, sort of. I'm prepared to be annoyingly persistent." "I'm not going to change," I said. And though I tried to keep my voice normal, I could hear the sadness in it. His face was thoughtful, no longer teasing. "It's still the other one, isn't it?" I cringed. Funny how he seemed to know not to say the name, just like before in the car with the music. He picked up on so much about me that I never said. "You don't have to talk about it," he told me. I nodded, grateful. "But don't get mad at me for hanging around, okay?" Jacob patted the back of my hand. "Because I'm not giving up. I've got loads of time." I sighed. "You shouldn't waste it on me," I said, though I wanted him to. Especially if he was willing to accept me the way I was. Damaged goods, as is. "It's what I want to do, as long as you still like to be with me." "I can't imagine how I could not like being with you," I told him honestly. Jacob beamed. "I can live with that." "Just don't expect more," I warned him, trying to pull my hand away. He held on to it obstinately. "This doesn't really bother you, does it?" he demanded, squeezing my fingers. "No," I sighed. Truthfully, it felt nice. His hand was so much warmer than mine. I always felt too cold these days. "And you don't care what he thinks," Jacob jerked his thumb toward the bathroom. "I guess not." "So what's the problem?" "The problem," I said, "is that it means something different to me than it does to you." "Well," he tightened his hand around mine, "that's my problem, isn't it?" "Fine," I grumbled. "Don't forget it, though." "I won't." "The pin's out of the grenade for me now, eh?" He poked me in the ribs. I rolled my eyes. I guess if he felt like making a joke out of it, he was entitled. He chuckled quietly for a minute while his pinky finger absently traced designs against the side of my hand. "That's a funny scar you've got there," he suddenly said, twisting my hand to examine it. "How did that happen?" The index finger of his free hand followed the line of the long, silvery crescent that was barely visible against my pale skin. I scowled. "Do you honestly expect me to remember where all my scars come from?" I waited for the memory to hit, to open the gaping hole. But as it so often did, Jacob's presence kept me whole. "It's cold," he murmured, pressing lightly against the place where James had cut me with his teeth. And then Mike stumbled out of the bathroom, his face ashen and covered in sweat. He looked horrible. "Oh, Mike," I gasped. "Do you mind leaving early?" he whispered. "No, of course not." I pulled my hand free and went to help Mike walk. He looked unsteady. Movie too much for you? Jacob asked heartlessly. Mike's glare was malevolent. I didn't actually see any of it, he mumbled. I was nauseated before the lights went down. Why didn't you say something? I scolded as we staggered toward the exit. I was hoping it would pass, he said. Just a sec, Jacob said as we reached the door. He walked quickly back to the concession stand. Could I have an empty popcorn bucket? He asked the sales girl. She looked at Mike once and then thrust a bucket at Jacob. Get him outside, please, she begged. She was obviously the one who would have to clean the floor. I towed Mike out into the cool, wet air. He inhaled deeply. Jacob was right behind us. He helped me get Mike into the back of the car and handed him the bucket with a serious gaze. Please, was all Jacob said. We rolled down the windows, letting the icy night air blow through the car, hoping it would help Mike. I curled my arms around my legs to keep warm. Cold again? Jacob asked, putting his arm around me before I could answer. You're not? He shook his head. You must have a fever or something, I grumbled. It was freezing. I touched my fingers to his forehead and his head was hot. Whoa, Jake, you're burning up. I feel fine, he shrugged, fit as a fiddle. I frowned and touched his head again. His skin blazed under my fingers. Your hands are like ice, he complained. Maybe it's me, I allowed. Mike groaned in the back seat and threw up in the bucket. I grimaced, hoping my own stomach could stand the sound and smell. Jacob checked anxiously over his shoulder to make sure his car wasn't defiled. The road felt longer on the way back. Jacob was quiet, thoughtful. He left his arm around me, and it was so warm that the cold wind felt good. I stared out the windshield, consumed with guilt. It was so wrong to encourage Jacob. Pure selfishness. It didn't matter that I'd tried to make my position clear. If he felt any hope at all that this could turn into something other than friendship, then I hadn't been clear enough. How could I explain so that he would understand? I was an empty shell, like a vacant house, condemned. For months I'd been utterly uninhabitable. Now I was a little improved. The front room was in better repair, but that was all. Just the one small piece. He deserved better than that. Better than a one-room, falling-down fixer-upper. No amount of investment on his part could put me back in working order. Yet I knew that I wouldn't send him away, regardless. I needed him too much, and I was selfish. Maybe I could make my side more clear, so that he would know to leave me. The thought made me shudder, and Jacob tightened his arm around me. I drove Mike home in a Suburban, while Jacob followed behind us to take me home. Jacob was quiet all the way back to my house, and I wondered if he were thinking the same things that I was. Maybe he was changing his mind. I would invite myself in, since we're early, he said as we pulled up next to my truck. But I think you might be right about the fever. I'm starting to feel a little strange. Oh no, not you too. Do you want me to drive you home? No. He shook his head, his eyebrows pulling together. I don't feel sick yet, just wrong. If I have to, I'll pull over. Will you call me as soon as you get in? I asked anxiously. Sure, sure, he frowned, staring ahead into the darkness and biting his lip. I opened my door to get out, but he grabbed my wrist lightly and held me there. I noticed again how hot his skin felt on mine. What is it, Jake? I asked. There's something I want to tell you, Bella, but I think it's going to sound kind of corny. I sighed. This would be more of the same from the theater. Go ahead. It's just that I know how you're unhappy a lot, and maybe it doesn't help anything, but I wanted you to know that I'm always here. I won't ever let you down. I promise that you can always count on me. Wow, that does sound corny, but you know that, right? That I would never, ever hurt you. Yeah, Jake, I know that. And I already do count on you, probably more than you know. The smile broke across his face the way the sunrise set the clouds on fire, and I wanted to cut my tongue out. I hadn't said one word that was a lie, but I should have lied. The truth was wrong. It would hurt him. I would let him down. A strange look crossed his face. "I really think I'd better go home now," he said. I got out quickly. "Call me," I yelled as he pulled away. I watched him go, and he seemed to be in control of the car, at least. I stared at the empty street when he was gone, feeling a little sick myself, but not for any physical reason. How much I wished that Jacob Black had been born my brother, my flesh and blood brother, so that I would have some legitimate claim on him that still left me free of any blame now. Heaven knows I had never wanted to use Jacob, but I couldn't help but interpret the guilt I felt now to mean that I had. Even more, I had never meant to love him. One thing I truly knew it in the pit of my stomach, in the center of my bones, knew it from the crown of my head to the soles of my feet, knew it deep in my empty chest, was how love gave someone the power to break you. I'd been broken beyond repair. But I needed Jacob now, needed him like a drug. I used him as a crutch for too long, and I was in deeper than I'd planned to go with anyone again. Now I couldn't bear for him to be hurt, and I couldn't keep from hurting him either. He thought time and patience would change me, and though I knew he was dead wrong, I also knew that I would let him try. He was my best friend. I would always love him, and it would never, ever be enough. I went inside to sit by the phone and bite my nails. "Movie over already?" Charlie asked in surprise when I came in. He was on the floor just a foot from the TV. Must be an exciting game. "Mike got sick," I explained. "Some kind of stomach flu." "You okay?" "I feel fine now," I said doubtfully. Clearly I'd been exposed. I leaned against the kitchen counter, my hand inches from the phone, and tried to wait patiently. I thought of the strange look on Jacob's face before he drove away, and my fingers started drumming against the counter. I should have insisted on driving him home. I watched the clock as the minutes ticked by. 10, 15. Even when I was driving, it took only 15 minutes, and Jacob drove faster than I did. 18 minutes. I picked up the phone and dialed. It rang and rang. Maybe Billy was asleep. Maybe I dialed wrong. I tried again. On the 8th ring, just as I was about to hang up, Billy answered. "Hello?" he asked. His voice was wary, like he was expecting bad news. "Billy, it's me, Bella. Did Jake make it home yet? He left here about 20 minutes ago." "He's here," Billy said tonelessly. "He was supposed to call me." I was a little irritated. "He was getting sick when he left, and I was worried." "He was too sick to call. He's not feeling well right now." Billy sounded distant. I realized he must want to be with Jacob. "Let me know if you need any help," I offered. "I could come down." I thought of Billy, stuck in his chair, and Jake fending for himself. "No, no," Billy said quickly. "We're fine. Stay at your place." The way he said it was almost rude. "Okay," I agreed. "Bye, Bella." The line disconnected. "Bye," I muttered. Well, at least he'd made it home. Oddly, I didn't feel less worried. I trudged up the stairs, fretting. Maybe I would go down before work tomorrow to check on him. I could take soup. We had to have a can of Campbell's around here somewhere. I realized all such plans were canceled when I woke up early. My clock said 4:30, and sprinted to the bathroom. Charlie found me there a half hour later, lying on the floor, my cheek pressed against the cold edge of the bathtub. He looked at me for a long moment. "Stomach flu," he finally said. "Yes," I moaned. "You need something?" he asked. "Call the Newtons for me, please," I instructed hoarsely. "Tell them I have what Mike has, and that I can't make it in today. Tell them I'm sorry." "Sure, no problem," Charlie assured me. I spent the rest of the day on the bathroom floor, sleeping for a few hours with my head on a crumpled-up towel. Charlie claimed that he had to work, but I suspected that he just wanted access to a bathroom. He left a glass of water on the floor beside me to keep me hydrated. It woke me up when he came back home. I could see that it was dark in my room, after nightfall. He clumped up the stairs to check on me.
Still alive?
Sort of, I said.
Do you want anything?
No, thanks. He hesitated, clearly out of his element.
Okay, then, he said,
and then he went back down to the kitchen. I heard the phone ring a few minutes later. Charlie spoke to someone in a low voice for a moment and then hung up.
Mike feels better, he called up to me.
Well, that was encouraging. He'd only gotten sick 8 hours or so before me.
8 more hours.
The thought made my stomach turn, and I pulled myself up to lean over the toilet. I fell asleep on the towel again, but when I woke up, I was in my bed and it was light outside my window. I didn't remember moving. Charlie must have carried me to my room. He'd also put the glass of water on my bedside table. I felt parched. I chugged it down, though it tasted funny from sitting stagnant all night. I got up slowly, trying not to trigger the nausea again. I was weak, and my mouth tasted horrible, but my stomach felt fine. I looked at my clock. My 24 hours were up. I didn't push it, eating nothing but saltine crackers for breakfast. Charlie looked relieved to see me recovered. As soon as I was sure that I wasn't going to have to spend the day on the bathroom floor again, I called Jacob. Jacob was the one who answered, but when I heard his greeting, I knew he wasn't over it.
Hello?
His voice was broken, cracking.
Oh, Jake, I groaned sympathetically. You sound horrible.
I feel horrible, he whispered. I'm so sorry I made you go out with me. This sucks.
I'm glad I went.
His voice was still a whisper.
Don't blame yourself. This isn't your fault.
You'll get better soon, I promised. I woke up this morning and I was fine.
You were sick?
He asked dully. Yes, I got it too, but I'm fine now.
That's good.
His voice was dead. So you'll probably be better in a few hours, I encouraged. I could barely hear his answer.
I don't think I have the same thing you did.
Don't you have the stomach flu? I asked, confused.
No, this is something else.
What's wrong with you?
Everything, he whispered. Every part of me hurts.
The pain in his voice was nearly tangible. What can I do, Jake? What can I bring you?
Nothing. You can't come here.
He was abrupt. It reminded me of Billy the other night. I've already been exposed to whatever you have, I pointed out. He ignored me.
I'll call you when I can. I'll let you know when you can come down again. Jacob, I've got to go, he said with sudden urgency.
Call me when you feel better.
Right,
he agreed. And his voice had a strange, bitter edge. He was silent for a moment. I was waiting for him to say goodbye, but he waited too.
I'll see you soon, I finally said. Wait for me to call, he said again.
Okay, bye, Jacob.
Bella,
he whispered my name, and then hung up the phone. Chapter 10, The Meadow. Jacob didn't call. The first time I called, Billy answered and told me that Jacob was still in bed. I got nosy, checking to make sure that Billy had taken him to a doctor. Billy said he had, but for some reason I couldn't nail down. I didn't really believe him. I called again, several times a day, for the next 2 days, but no one was ever there. Saturday, I decided to go see him, invitation be damned. But the little red house was empty. This frightened me. Was Jacob so sick that he'd needed to go to the hospital? I stopped by the hospital on the way back home, but the nurse at the front desk told me neither Jacob or Billy had been in. I made Charlie call Harry Clearwater as soon as he got home from work. I waited, anxious, while Charlie chatted with his old friend.
The conversation seemed to go on forever, without Jacob even being mentioned. It seemed that Harry had been in the hospital, some kind of test for his heart. Charlie's forehead got all pinched together, but Harry joked with him, blowing it off, until Charlie was laughing again. Only then did Charlie ask about Jacob, and now his side of the conversation didn't give me much to work with, just a lot of hmms and yas. I drummed my fingers against the counter beside him until he put a hand over mine to stop me. Finally, Charlie hung up the phone and turned to me. Harry says there's been some trouble with the phone lines, and that's why you haven't been able to get through. Billy took Jake to the dock down there, and it looks like he has mono. He's real tired, and Billy said no visitors, he reported. No visitors? I demanded in disbelief. Charlie raised one eyebrow. Now don't you go making a pest of yourself, Bells. Billy knows what's best for Jake. He'll be up and around soon enough. Be patient. I didn't push it. Charlie was too worried about Harry. That was clearly the more important issue. It wouldn't be right to bug him with my lesser concerns. Instead, I went straight upstairs and turned on my computer. I found a medical site online and typed mononucleosis into the search box. All I knew about mono was that you were supposed to get it from kissing, which was clearly not the case with Jake. I read through the symptoms quickly. The fever he definitely had, but what about the rest of it? No horrible sore throat, no exhaustion, no headaches. At least not before he'd gone home from the movie. He'd said he felt fit as a fiddle. Did it really come on so fast? The article made it sound like the sore stuff showed up first. I glared at the computer screen and wondered why exactly I was doing this. Why did I feel so suspicious, like I didn't believe Billy's story? Why would Billy lie to Harry? I was being silly, probably. I was just worried. And to be honest, I was afraid of not being allowed to see Jacob. That made me nervous. I skimmed through the rest of the article looking for more information. I stopped when I got to the part about how mono could last more than a month. A month? My mouth fell open. But Billy couldn't enforce the no visitors thing that long. Of course not. Jake would go crazy stuck in bed that long without anyone to talk to. What was Billy afraid of, anyway? The article said that a person with mono needed to avoid physical activity, but there was nothing about visitors. The disease wasn't very infectious. I'd give Billy a week, I decided, before I got pushy. A week was generous. A week was long. By Wednesday, I was sure I wasn't going to live till Saturday. When I decided to leave Billy and Jacob alone for a week, I hadn't really believed that Jacob would go along with Billy's rule. Every day when I got home from school, I ran to the phone to check for messages. There never were any. I cheated 3 times by trying to call him, but the phone lines still weren't working. I was in the house much, and much too alone. Without Jacob, and my adrenaline and my distractions, everything I'd been repressing started creeping up on me. The dreams got hard again. I could no longer see the end coming. Just the horrible nothingness. Half the time in the forest, half the time in the empty fern sea where the White House no longer existed. Sometimes Sam Yulee was there in the forest, watching me again. I paid him no attention. There was no comfort in his presence. It made me feel no less alone. It didn't stop me from screaming myself awake. Night after night. The hole in my chest was worse than ever. I thought that I'd been getting it under control, but I found myself hunched over, day after day, clutching my sides together and gasping for air. I wasn't handling alone well. I was relieved beyond measure the morning I woke up, screaming, of course, and remembered that it was Saturday. Today I could call Jacob. And if the phone lines still weren't working, then I was going to La Push. One way or another, today would be better than the last lonely week. I dialed, and then waited without high expectations. It caught me off guard when Billy answered on the second ring. Hello? Oh, hey, the phone is working again. Hi, Billy, it's Bella. I was just calling to see how Jacob is doing. Is he up for visitors yet? I was thinking about dropping by. I'm sorry, Bella, Billy interrupted. And I wondered if he were watching TV. He sounded distracted. He's not in.
Oh. It took me a second. So he's feeling better then?
Yeah. Billy hesitated for an instant too long. Turns out it wasn't mono after all. Just some other virus.
Oh. So, where is he?
He's giving some friends a ride up to Port Angeles. I think they were going to catch a double feature or something. He's gone for the whole day.
Well, that's a relief. I've been so worried. I'm glad he felt good enough to get out.
My voice sounded horribly phony as I babbled on. Jacob was better, but not well enough to call me. He was out with friends. I was sitting home, missing him more every hour. I was lonely, worried, bored, perforated, and now also desolate as I realized that the week apart had not had the same effect on him.
Is there anything in particular you wanted? Billy asked politely.
No, not really.
Well, I'll tell him that you called, Billy promised. Bye, Bella.
Bye, I replied, but he'd already hung up. I stood for a moment with the phone still in my hand. Jacob must have changed his mind just like I'd feared. He was going to take my advice and not waste any more time on someone who couldn't return his feelings. I felt the blood run out of my face.
Something wrong? Charlie asked as he came down the stairs.
No, I lied, hanging up the phone.
Billy says Jacob is feeling better. It wasn't mono, so that's good.
Is he coming here or are you going there? Charlie asked absentmindedly as he started poking through the fridge.
Neither, I admitted. He's going out with some other friends.
The tone of my voice finally caught Charlie's attention. He looked up at me with sudden alarm, his hands frozen around a package of cheese slices. Isn't it a little early for lunch? I asked as lightly as I could manage, trying to distract him.
No, I'm just packing something to take out to the river.
Oh, fishing today?
Well, Harry called, and it's not raining.
He was creating a stack of food on the counter as he spoke. Suddenly he looked up again as if he'd just realized something.
Say, did you want me to stay with you since Jake's out?
That's okay, Dad, I said, working to sound indifferent. The fish bite better when the weather's nice. He stared at me, indecision clear on his face. I knew that he was worrying, afraid to leave me alone in case I got mopey again.
Seriously, Dad, I think I'll call Jessica, I fibbed quickly.
I'd rather be alone than have him watching me all day.
We have a calculus test to study for. I could use her help.
That part was true, but I'd have to make do without it.
That's a good idea. You've been spending so much time with Jacob. Your other friends are going to think you've forgotten them.
I smiled and nodded as if I cared what my other friends thought. Charlie started to turn, but then spun back with a worried expression.
Hey, you'll study here or at Jess's, right?
Sure, where else?
Well, it's just that I want you to be careful to stay out of the woods, like I told you before.
It took me a minute to understand, distracted as I was.
More bear trouble?
Charlie nodded, frowning.
We've got a missing hiker. The rangers found his camp early this morning, but no sign of him. There were some really big animal prints. Of course, those could have come later, smelling the food. Anyway, they're setting traps for it now.
Oh, I said vaguely. I wasn't really listening to his warnings. I was much more upset by the situation with Jacob than by the possibility of being eaten by a bear. I was glad that Charlie was in a hurry. He didn't wait for me to call Jessica, so I didn't have to put on that charade. I went through the motions of gathering my school books on the kitchen table to pack them in my bag. That was probably too much. And if he hadn't been eager to hit the holes, it might have made him suspicious. I was so busy looking busy that the ferociously empty day ahead didn't really crash down on me till after I'd watched him drive away. It only took about 2 minutes of staring at the silent kitchen phone to decide that I wasn't staying home today. I considered my options. I wasn't going to call Jessica. As far as I could tell, Jessica had crossed over to the dark side. I could drive to La Push and get my motorcycle. An appealing thought, but for one minor problem. Who was going to drive me to the emergency room if I needed it afterward? Or, I already had our map and compass in the truck. was pretty sure I understood the process well enough by now that I wouldn't get lost. Maybe I could eliminate two lines today, putting us ahead of schedule for whenever Jacob decided to honor me with his presence again. I refused to think about how long that might be, or if it was going to be never. I felt a brief twinge of guilt as I realized how Charlie would feel about this, but I ignored it. I just couldn't stay in the house again today. A few minutes later, I was on the familiar dirt road that led to nowhere in particular. I had the windows rolled down, and I drove as fast as was healthy for my truck, trying to enjoy the wind against my face. It was cloudy, but almost dry. A very nice day for Forks. Getting started took me longer than it would have taken Jacob. After I parked in the usual spot, I had to spend a good 15 minutes studying the little needle on the compass face and the markings on the now worn map. When I was reasonably certain that I was following the right line of the web, I set off into the woods. The forest was full of life today, all the little creatures enjoying the momentary dryness. Somehow, though, even with the birds chirping and cawing, the insects buzzing noisily around my head, and the occasional scurry of the field mice through the shrubs, the forest seemed creepier today. It reminded me of my most recent nightmare. I knew it was just because I was alone, missing Jacob's carefree whistle and the sound of another pair of feet squishing across the damp ground. The sense of unease grew stronger the deeper I got into the trees. Breathing started to get more difficult, not because of exertion, but because I was having trouble with the stupid hole in my chest again. I kept my arms tight around my torso and tried to banish the ache from my thoughts. I almost turned around, but I hated to waste the effort I'd already expended. The rhythm of my footsteps started to numb my mind and my pain as I trudged on. My breathing evened out eventually, and I was glad I hadn't quit. I was getting better at this bushwhacking thing. I could tell I was faster. I didn't realize quite how much more efficiently I was moving. I thought I'd covered maybe 4 miles, and I wasn't even starting to look around for it yet. And then, with an abruptness that disoriented me, I stepped through a low arch made by 2 vine maples, pushing past the chest-high ferns into the meadow. It was the same place. Of that I was instantly sure. I'd never seen another clearing so symmetrical. It was as perfectly round as if someone had intentionally created the flawless circle, tearing out the trees but leaving no evidence of that violence in the waving grass. To the east, I could hear the stream bubbling quietly. The place wasn't nearly so stunning without the sunlight, but it was still very beautiful and serene. It was the wrong season for wildflowers. The ground was thick with tall grass that swayed in the light breeze like ripples across a lake. It was the same place, but it didn't hold what I had been searching for. The disappointment was nearly as instantaneous as the recognition. I sank down right where I was, kneeling there at the edge of the clearing, beginning to gasp. What was the point of going any farther? Nothing lingered here. Nothing more than the memories that I could have called back whenever I wanted to, if I was ever willing to endure the corresponding pain. The pain that had me now. Had me cold. There was nothing special about this place without him. I wasn't exactly sure what I'd hoped to feel here, but the meadow was empty of atmosphere, empty of everything, just like everywhere else, just like my nightmares. My head swirled dizzily. At least I'd come alone. I felt a rush of thankfulness as I realized that. If I'd discovered the meadow with Jacob, well, there was no way I could have disguised the abyss I was plunging into now. How could I have explained the way I was fracturing into pieces? The way I had to curl into a ball to keep the empty hole from tearing me apart? It was so much better that I didn't have an audience. And I wouldn't have to explain to anyone why I was in such a hurry to leave either. Jacob would have assumed, after going to so much trouble to locate the stupid place, I would want to spend more than a few seconds here. But I was already trying to find the strength to get to my feet again, forcing myself out of the ball so that I could escape. There was too much pain in this empty place to bear. I would crawl away if I had to. How lucky that I was alone. Alone. I repeated the word with grim satisfaction as I wrenched myself to my feet despite the pain. At precisely that moment, a figure stepped out from the trees to the north, some 30 paces away. A dizzying array of emotions shot through me in a second. The first was surprise. I was far from any trail here, and I didn't expect company. Then as my eyes focused on the motionless figure, seeing the utter stillness, the pallid skin, a rush of piercing hope rocked through me. I suppressed it viciously, fighting against the equally sharp lash of agony as my eyes continued to the face beneath the black hair. The face that wasn't the one I wanted to see. Next was fear. This was not the face I grieved for, but was close enough for me to know that the man facing me was no stray hiker. And finally, in the end, recognition. "Laurent!" I cried in surprised pleasure. It was an irrational response. I probably should have stopped at fear. Laurent had been one of James's coven when we'd first met. He hadn't been involved with the hunt that followed, the hunt where I was the quarry, but that was only because he was afraid. I was protected by a bigger coven than his own. It would have been different if that wasn't the case. He'd had no compunctions, at the time, against making a meal of me. Of course, he must have changed, because he'd gone to Alaska to live with the other civilized coven there, the other family that refused to drink human blood for ethical reasons. The other family, like, but I couldn't let myself think the name. Yes, fear would have made more sense, but all I felt was an overwhelming satisfaction. The meadow was a magic place again. A darker magic than I'd expected, to be sure, but magic all the same. Here was the connection I'd sought. The proof, however remote, that somewhere in the same world where I lived, he did exist. It was impossible how exactly the same Laurent looked. I suppose it was very silly and human to expect some kind of change in the last year. But there was something. I couldn't quite put my finger on it. "Bella?" he asked, looking more astonished than I felt. "You remember," I smiled. It was ridiculous that I should be so elated because a vampire knew my name. He grinned. "I didn't expect to see you here." He strolled toward me, his expression bemused. "Isn't it the other way around? I do live here. I thought you'd gone to Alaska." He stopped about 10 paces away, cocking his head to the side. His face was the most beautiful face I'd seen in what felt like an eternity. I studied his features with a strangely greedy sense of release. Here was someone I didn't have to pretend for, someone who already knew everything I could never say. "You're right," he agreed. "I did go to Alaska. Still, I didn't expect... When I found the Cullen place empty, I thought they'd moved on." "Oh." I bit my lip as the name set the raw edges of my wound throbbing. It took me a second to compose myself. Laurent waited with curious eyes. "They did move on," I finally managed to tell him. "Hmm," he murmured. "I'm surprised they left you behind. Weren't you sort of a pet of theirs?" His eyes were innocent of any intended offense. I smiled wryly. "Something like that." "Hmm," he said, thoughtful again. At that precise moment, I realized why he looked the same. Too much the same. After Carlisle told us that Laurent had stayed with Tanya's family, I'd begun to picture him, on the rare occasions that I thought of him at all, with the same golden eyes that the Cullens, I forced the name out wincing, had. That all good vampires had. I took an involuntary step back, and his curious, dark red eyes followed the movement. "Do they visit often?" he asked. Still casual, but his weight shifted toward me. "Lie," the beautiful velvet voice whispered anxiously from my memory. I started at the sound of his voice, but it should not have surprised me. Was I not in the worst danger imaginable? The motorcycle was safe as kittens next to this. I did what the voice said to do. "Now and again," I tried to make my voice light, relaxed, The time seems longer to me, I imagine. You know how they get distracted. I was beginning to babble. I had to work to shut myself up. Hmm, he said again. The house smelled like it had been vacant for a while. You must lie better than that, Bella, the voice urged. I tried. I'll have to mention to Carlyle that you stopped by. He'll be sorry they missed your visit. I pretended to deliberate for a second. But I probably shouldn't mention it to Edward, I suppose. I barely managed to say his name, and it twisted my expression on the way out, ruining my bluff. He has such a temper. Well, I'm sure you remember. He's still touchy about the whole James thing. I rolled my eyes and waved one hand dismissively, like it was all ancient history. But there was an edge of hysteria to my voice. I wondered if he would recognize what it was. Is he really? Laurent asked pleasantly, skeptically. I kept my reply short, so that my voice wouldn't betray my panic. Mm-hmm. Laurent took a casual step to the side, gazing around at the little meadow. I didn't miss that the step brought him closer to me. In my head, the voice responded with a low snarl. So how are things working out in Denali? Carlyle said you were staying with Tanya. My voice was too high. The question made him pause. I like Tanya very much, he mused, and her sister Irina even more. I've never stayed in one place for so long before, and I enjoy the advantages, the novelty of it. But the restrictions are difficult. I'm surprised that any of them can keep it up for long. He smiled at me conspiratorially. Sometimes I cheat. I couldn't swallow. My foot started to ease back, but I froze when his red eyes flickered down to catch the movement. Oh, I said in a faint voice. Jasper has problems with that too. Don't move, the voice whispered. I tried to do what he instructed. It was hard. The instinct to take flight was nearly uncontrollable. Really? Laurent seemed interested. Is that why they left? No, I answered honestly. Jasper is more careful at home. Yes, Laurent agreed. I am too. The step forward he took now was quite deliberate. Did Victoria ever find you? I asked, breathless, desperate to distract him. It was the first question that popped into my head, and I regretted it as soon as the words were spoken. Victoria, who had hunted me with James and then disappeared, was not someone I wanted to think of at this particular moment. But the question did stop him. Yes, he said, hesitating on that step. I actually came here as a favor to her. He made a face. She won't be happy about this. About what? I said eagerly, inviting him to continue. He was glaring into the trees away from me. I took advantage of his diversion, taking a furtive step back. He looked back at me and smiled. The expression made him look like a black-haired angel. About me killing you, he answered in a seductive purr. I staggered back another step. The frantic growling in my head made it hard to hear. She wanted to save that part for herself, he went on blithely. She sort of put out with you, Bella. Me? I squeaked. He shook his head and chuckled. I know, it seems a little backward to me too, but James was her mate, and your Edward killed him. Even here, on the point of death, his name tore against my unhealed wounds like a serrated edge. Laurent was oblivious to my reaction. She thought it more appropriate to kill you than Edward. Fair turnabout. Mate for mate. She asked me to get the lay of the land for her, so to speak. I didn't imagine you would be so easy to get to. So maybe her plan was flawed. Apparently it wouldn't be the revenge she imagined, since you must not mean very much to him if he left you here unprotected. Another blow, another tear through my chest. Laurent's weight shifted slightly and I stumbled another step back. He frowned. I suppose she'll be angry all the same. Then why not wait for her? I choked out. A mischievous grin rearranged his features.
Well, you've caught me at a bad time, Bella. I didn't come to this place on Victoria's mission. I was hunting. I'm quite thirsty. And you do smell simply mouth-watering. Laurent looked at me with approval, as if he meant it as a compliment. Threaten him, the beautiful delusion ordered, his voice distorted with dread. He'll know it was you, I whispered obediently. You won't get away with this. And why not? Laurent's smile widened. He gazed around the small opening in the trees. The scent will wash away with the next rain. No one will find your body. You'll simply go missing, like so many, many other humans. There's no reason for Edward to think of me, if he cares enough to investigate. This is nothing personal, let me assure you, Bella. Just thirst. Beg, my hallucination begged. Please, I gasped. Laurent shook his head, his face kind. Look at it this way, Bella. You're very lucky I was the one to find you. Am I? I mouthed, faltering another step back. Laurent followed, lithe and graceful. Yes, he assured me. I'll be very quick. You won't feel a thing, I promise. Oh, I'll lie to Victoria about that later, naturally, just to placate her. But if you knew what she had planned for you, Bella. He shook his head with a slow movement, almost as if in disgust. I swear you'd be thanking me for this. I stared at him in horror. He sniffed at the breeze that blew threads of my hair in his direction. Mouth-watering, he repeated, inhaling deeply. I tensed for the spring, my eyes squinting as I cringed away, and the sound of Edward's furious roar echoed distantly in the back of my head. His name burst through all the walls I'd built to contain it. Edward, Edward, Edward. I was going to die. It shouldn't matter if I thought of him now. Edward, I love you. Through my narrowed eyes, I watched as Laurent paused in the act of inhaling and whipped his head abruptly to the left. I was afraid to look away from him, to follow his glance, though he hardly needed a distraction or any other trick to overpower me. I was too amazed to feel relief when he started slowly backing away from me. I don't believe it, he said, his voice so low that I barely heard it. I had to look then. My eyes scanned the meadow, searching for the interruption that had extended my life by a few seconds. At first I saw nothing, and my gaze flickered back to Laurent. He was retreating more quickly now, his eyes boring into the forest. Then I saw it. A huge black shape eased out of the trees, quiet as a shadow, and stalked deliberately toward the vampire. It was enormous, as tall as a horse, but thicker, much more muscular. The long muzzle grimaced, revealing a line of dagger-like incisors. A grisly snarl rolled out from between the teeth, rumbling across the clearing like a prolonged crack of thunder. The bear. Only it wasn't a bear at all. Still, this gigantic black monster had to be the creature causing all the alarm. From a distance, anyone would assume it was a bear. What else could be so vast, so powerfully built? I wished I were lucky enough to see it from a distance. Instead, it padded silently through the grass a mere 10 feet from where I stood. Don't move an inch, Edward's voice whispered. I stared at the monstrous creature, my mind boggling as I tried to put a name to it. There was a distinctly canine cast to the shape of it, the way it moved. I could only think of one possibility, locked in horror as I was. Yet I'd never imagined that a wolf could get so big. Another growl rumbled in its throat, and I shuddered away from the sound. Laurent was backing toward the edge of the trees, and under the freezing terror, confusion swept through me. Why was Laurent retreating? Granted, the wolf was monstrous in size, but it was just an animal. What reason would a vampire have for fearing an animal? And Laurent was afraid.
His eyes were wide with horror, just like mine. As if in answer to my question, suddenly the mammoth wolf was not alone. Flanking it on either side, another two gigantic beasts prowled silently into the meadow. One was a deep gray, the other brown, neither one quite as tall as the first. The gray wolf came through the trees only a few feet from me, its eyes locked on Laurent. Before I could even react, two more wolves followed, lined up in a V like geese flying south, which meant that the rusty brown monster that shrugged through the brush last was close enough for me to touch. I gave an involuntary gasp and jumped back, which was the stupidest thing I could have done. I froze again, waiting for the wolves to turn on me, the much weaker of the available prey. I wished briefly that Laurent would get on with it and crush the wolf pack. It should be so simple for him. I guessed that between the two choices before me, being eaten by wolves was almost certainly the worse option. The wolf closest to me, the reddish-brown one, turned its head slightly at the sound of my gasp. The wolf's eyes were dark, nearly black. It gazed at me for a fraction of a second, the deep eyes seeming too intelligent for a wild animal. As it stared at me, I suddenly thought of Jacob, again with gratitude. At least I'd come here alone, to this fairy tale meadow filled with dark monsters. At least Jacob wasn't going to die too. At least I wouldn't have his death on my hands. Then another low growl from the leader caused the russet wolf to whip his head around, back toward Laurent. Laurent was staring at the pack of monster wolves with unconcealed shock and fear. The first I could understand, but I was stunned when, without warning, he spun and disappeared into the trees. He ran away. The wolves were after him in a second, sprinting across the open grass with a few powerful bounds, snarling and snapping so loudly that my hands flew up instinctively to cover my ears. The sound faded with surprising swiftness once they disappeared into the woods. And then I was alone again. My knees buckled under me, and I fell onto my hands, sobs building in my throat. I knew I needed to leave, and leave now. How long would the wolves chase Laurent before they doubled back for me? Or would Laurent turn on them? Would he be the one that came looking? I couldn't move at first, though. My arms and legs were shaking, and I didn't know how to get back to my feet. My mind couldn't move past the fear, the horror, or the confusion. I didn't understand what I'd just witnessed. A vampire should not have run from overgrown dogs like that. What good would their teeth be against his granite skin? And the wolves should have given Laurent a wide berth. Even if their extraordinary size had taught them to fear nothing, it still made no sense that they would pursue him. I doubted his icy marble skin would smell anything like food. Why would they pass up something warm-blooded and weak like me to chase after Laurent? I couldn't make it add up. A cold breeze whipped through the meadow, swaying the grass like something was moving through it. I scrambled to my feet, backing away even though the wind brushed harmlessly past me. Stumbling in panic, I turned and ran headlong into the trees. The next few hours were agony. It took me three times as long to escape the trees as it had to get to the meadow. At first, I paid no attention to where I was headed, focused only on what I was running from. By the time I collected myself enough to remember the compass, I was deep in the unfamiliar and menacing forest. My hands were shaking so violently that I had to set the compass on the muddy ground to be able to read it. Every few minutes, I would stop to put the compass down and check that I was still heading northwest, hearing, when the sounds weren't hidden behind the frantic squelching of my footsteps, the quiet whisper of unseen things moving in the leaves. The call of a jaybird made me leap back and fall into a thick stand of young spruce, scraping up my arms and tangling my hair with sap. The sudden rush of a squirrel up a hemlock made me scream so loud it hurt my own ears. At last, there was a break in the trees ahead. I came out onto the empty road a mile or so south of where I'd left the truck. Exhausted as I was, I jogged up the lane until I found it. By the time I pulled myself into the cab, I was sobbing again. I fiercely shoved down both stiff locks before I dug my keys out of my pocket. The roar of the engine was comforting and sane. It helped me control the tears as I sped as fast as my truck would allow toward the main highway. I was calmer, but still a mess when I got home. Charlie's cruiser was in the driveway. I hadn't realized how late it was. The sky was already dusky.
Bella?
Charlie asked when I slammed the front door behind me and hastily turned the locks.
Yeah, it's me.
My voice was unsteady.
Where have you been?
He thundered, appearing through the kitchen doorway with an ominous expression. I hesitated. He'd probably called the Stanleys. I'd better stick to the truth.
I was hiking, I admitted.
His eyes were tight.
What happened to going to Jessica's?
I didn't feel like calculus today. Charlie folded his arms across his chest.
I thought I asked you to stay out of the forest.
Yeah, I know. Don't worry, I won't do it again. I shuddered. Charlie seemed to really look at me for the first time. I remembered that I had spent some time on the forest floor today. I must be a mess.
What happened? Charlie demanded.
Again, I decided that the truth, or part of it anyway, was the best option. I was too shaken to pretend that I'd spent an uneventful day with the flora and fauna.
I saw the bear.
I tried to say it calmly, but my voice was high and shaky.
It's not a bear, though. It's some kind of wolf. And there are five of them. A big black one, and gray, and reddish-brown.
Charlie's eyes grew round with horror. He strode quickly to me and grabbed the tops of my arms.
Are you okay?
My head bobbed in a weak nod.
Tell me what happened. They didn't pay any attention to me, but after they were gone, I ran away and I fell down a lot.
He let go of my shoulders and wrapped his arms around me. For a long moment, he didn't say anything.
Wolves, he murmured.
What?
The ranger said the tracks were wrong for a bear, but wolves just don't get that big.
These were huge.
How many did you say you saw?
Five. Charlie shook his head, frowning with anxiety. He finally spoke in a tone that allowed no argument.
No more hiking.
No problem, I promised fervently. Charlie called the station to report what I'd seen. I fudged a little bit about where exactly I'd seen the wolves, claiming I'd been on the trail that led to the north. I didn't want my dad to know how deep I'd gone into the forest against his wishes. And more importantly, I didn't want anyone wandering near where Laurent might be searching for me. The thought of it made me feel sick.
Are you hungry?
He asked me when he hung up the phone. I shook my head. Though I must have been starving, I hadn't eaten all day.
Just tired, I told him.
I turned for the stairs.
Hey,
Charlie said, his voice suddenly suspicious again.
Didn't you say Jacob was gone for the day?
That's what Billy said, I told him, confused by his question. He studied my expression for a minute and seemed satisfied with what he saw there.
Huh.
Why? I demanded. It sounded like he was implying that I'd been lying to him this morning, about something besides studying with Jessica.
Well, it's just that when I went to pick up Harry, I saw Jacob out in front of the store down there with some of his friends. I waved hi, but he... Well, I guess I don't know if he saw me. I think maybe he was arguing with his friends. He looked strange, like he was upset about something. And different. It's like you can watch that kid growing. He gets bigger every time I see him.
Billy said Jake and his friends were going up to Port Angeles to see some movies. They were probably just waiting for someone to meet them.
Oh.
Charlie nodded and headed for the kitchen. I stood in the hall thinking about Jacob arguing with his friends. I wondered if he had confronted Emery about the situation with Sam. Maybe that was the reason he ditched me today. If it meant he could sort things out with Emery, I was glad he had. I paused to check the locks again before I went to my room. It was a silly thing to do. What difference would a lock make to any of the monsters I'd seen this afternoon? I assumed the handle alone would stymie the wolves, not having opposable thumbs. And if Laurent came here? Or Victoria? I lay down on my bed, but I was shaking too hard to hope for sleep. I curled into a cramped ball under my quilt and faced the horrifying facts. There was nothing I could do. There were no precautions I could take. There was no place I could hide. There was no one who could help me. I realized with a nauseous roll of my stomach that the situation was worse than even that. Because all those facts applied to Charlie, too. My father, sleeping one room away from me, was just a hair's breadth off the heart of the target that was centered on me. My scent would lead them here, whether I was here or not. The tremors rocked me until my teeth chattered. To calm myself, I fantasized the impossible. I imagined the big wolves catching up to Laurent in the woods and massacring the indestructible immortal the way they would any normal person. Despite the absurdity of such a vision, the idea comforted me. If the wolves got him, then he couldn't tell Victoria I was here all alone. If he didn't return, maybe she'd think the Cullens were still protecting me. If only the wolves could win such a fight. My good vampires were never coming back. How soothing it was to imagine that the other kind could also disappear. I squeezed my eyes tight together and waited for unconsciousness, almost eager for my nightmare to start. Better that than the pale, beautiful face that smiled at me now from behind my lids. In my imagination, Victoria's eyes were black with thirst, bright with anticipation, and her lips curled back from her gleaming teeth in pleasure. Her red hair was brilliant as fire. It blew chaotically around her wild face. Laurent's words repeated in my head, "If you knew what she had planned for you." I pressed my fist against my mouth to keep from screaming. Chapter 11, Cult. Each time that I opened my eyes to the morning light and realized I'd lived through another night was a surprise to me. After the surprise wore off, my heart would start to race and my palms would sweat. I couldn't really breathe again until I'd gotten up and ascertained that Charlie had survived as well. I could tell he was worried, watching me jump at any loud sound or my face suddenly go white for no reason that he could see. From the questions he asked now and then, he seemed to blame the change on Jacob's continued absence. The terror that was always foremost in my thoughts usually distracted me from the fact that another week had passed and Jacob still hadn't called me. But when I was able to concentrate on my normal life, if my life was really ever normal, this upset me. I missed him horribly. It had been bad enough to be alone before I was scared silly. Now, more than ever, I yearned for his carefree laugh and his infectious grin. I needed the safe sanity of his homemade garage and his warm hand around my cold fingers. I'd half expected him to call on Monday. If there had been some progress with Embry, wouldn't he want to report it? I wanted to believe that it was worry for his friend that was occupying all his time. Not that he was just giving up on me. I called him Tuesday, but no one answered. Were the phone lines still having problems, or had Billy invested in caller ID? On Wednesday, I called every half hour until after 11 at night, desperate to hear the warmth of Jacob's voice. Thursday, I sat in my truck in front of my house, with the locks pushed down, keys in hand, for a solid hour. I was arguing with myself, trying to justify a quick trip to La Push, but I couldn't do it. I knew that Laurent had gone back to Victoria by now. If I went to La Push, I took the chance of leading one of them there. What if they caught up to me when Jake was nearby? As much as it hurt me, I knew it was better for Jacob that he was avoiding me. Safer for him. It was bad enough that I couldn't figure out a way to keep Charlie safe. Nighttime was the most likely time that they would come looking for me. And what could I say to get Charlie out of the house? If I told him the truth, he'd have me locked up in a rubber room somewhere. I would have endured that, welcomed it even, if it could have kept him safe. But Victoria would still come to his house first, looking for me. Maybe, if she found me here, that would be enough for her. Maybe she would just leave when she was done with me. So I couldn't run away. Even if I could, where would I go? To Renee? I shuddered at the thought of dragging my lethal shadows into my mother's safe, sunny world. I would never endanger her that way. The worry was eating a hole in my stomach. Soon I would have matching punctures. That night, Charlie did me another favor and called Harry again to see if the Blacks were out of town. Harry reported that Billy had attended the council meeting Wednesday night and never mentioned anything about leaving. Charlie warned me not to make a nuisance of myself. Jacob would call when he got around to it. Friday afternoon, as I drove home from school, it hit me out of the blue. I wasn't paying attention to the familiar road, letting the sound of the engine deaden my brain and silence the worries, when my subconscious delivered a verdict it must have been working on for some time without my knowledge. As soon as I thought of it, I felt really stupid for not seeing it sooner. Sure, I'd had a lot on my mind. Revenge-obsessed vampires, giant mutant wolves, a ragged hole in the center of my chest. But when I laid the evidence out, it was embarrassingly obvious. Jacob avoiding me. Charlie saying he looked strange, upset. Billy's vague, unhelpful answers. Holy crow, I knew exactly what was going on with Jacob. It was Sam Yulee. Even my nightmares had been trying to tell me that. Sam had gotten to Jacob. Whatever was happening to the other boys on the reservation had reached out and stolen my friend. He'd been sucked into Sam's cult. He hadn't given up on me at all, I realized with a rush of feeling. I let my truck idle in front of my house. What should I do? I weighed the dangers against each other. If I went looking for Jacob, I risked the chance of Victoria or Laurent finding me with him. If I didn't go after him, Sam would pull him deeper into his frightening, compulsory gang. Maybe it would be too late if I didn't act soon. It had been a week, and no vampires had come for me yet. A week was more than enough time for them to have returned, so I must not be a priority. Most likely, as I decided before, they would come for me at night. The chances of them following me to La Push were much lower than the chance of losing Jacob to Sam. It was worth the danger of the secluded forest road. This was no idle visit to see what was going on. I knew what was going on. This was a rescue mission. I was going to talk to Jacob, kidnap him if I had to. I'd once seen a PBS show on deprogramming the brainwashed. There had to be some kind of cure. I decided I'd better call Charlie first. Maybe whatever was going on down in La Push was something the police should be involved in. I dashed inside, in a hurry to be on my way. Charlie answered the phone at the station himself. Chief Swan! Dad, it's Bella. What's wrong? I couldn't argue with his doomsday assumption this time. My voice was shaking. I'm worried about Jacob. Why? He asked, surprised by the unexpected topic. I think something weird is going on down at the reservation. Jacob told me about some strange stuff happening with the other boys his age. Now he's acting the same way and I'm scared. What kind of stuff? He used his professional, police business voice. That was good. He was taking me seriously. First he was scared, and then he was avoiding me. And now, I'm afraid he's part of that bizarre gang down there. Sam's gang. Sam Yulee's gang. Sam Yulee? Charlie repeated, surprised again. Yes. Charlie's voice was more relaxed when he answered. I think you've got it wrong, Bells. Sam Yulee is a great kid. Well, he's a man now. A good son. You should hear Billy talk about him. He's really doing wonders with the youth on the reservation. He's the one who... Charlie broke off mid-sentence, and I guessed that he had been about to make a reference to the night I'd gotten lost in the woods. I moved on quickly. Dad, it's not like that. Jacob was scared of him. Did you talk to Billy about this? He was trying to soothe me now. I'd lost him as soon as I'd mentioned Sam. Billy's not concerned. Well, Bella, then I'm sure it's okay. Jacob's a kid. He was probably just messing around. I'm sure he's fine. He can't spend every waking minute with you, after all. This isn't about me, I insisted. But the battle was lost. I don't think you need to worry about this. Let Billy take care of Jacob. Charlie, my voice was starting to sound whiny. Bells, I got a lot on my plate right now. Two tourists have gone missing off a trail outside Crescent Lake. There was an anxious edge to his voice. This wolf problem is getting out of hand. I was momentarily distracted, stunned, really, by his news. There was no way the wolves could have survived a matchup with Laurent.
Are you sure that's what happened to them?
I asked.
Afraid so, honey. There was...
He hesitated.
There were tracks again and... some blood this time.
Oh. It must not have come to a confrontation then. Laurent must have simply outrun the wolves. But why? What I'd seen in the meadow just got stranger and stranger. More impossible to understand.
Look, I really have to go. Don't worry about Jake, Bella. I'm sure it's nothing.
Fine, I said curtly, frustrated as his words reminded me of the more urgent crisis at hand.
Bye.
I hung up. I stared at the phone for a long minute. What the hell? I decided. Billy answered after two rings.
Hello?
Hey, Billy,
I almost growled. I tried to sound more friendly as I continued.
Can I talk to Jacob, please?
Jake's not here.
What a shock.
Do you know where he is?
He's out with his friends.
Billy's voice was careful.
Oh, yeah? Anyone I know? Quill?
I could tell the words didn't come across as casually as I'd meant them to.
No,
Billy said slowly. I don't think he's with Quill today. I knew better than to mention Sam's name.
Embry?
I asked. Billy seemed happier to answer this one.
Yeah, he's with Embry.
That was enough for me. Embry was one of them.
We'll have him call me when he gets in, all right?
Sure, sure, no problem.
Click.
See you soon, Billy,
I muttered into the dead phone. I drove to La Push, determined to wait. I'd sit out front of his house all night if I had to. I'd miss school. The boy was going to have to come home sometime, and when he did, he was going to have to talk to me. My mind was so preoccupied that the trip I'd been terrified of making seemed to take only a few seconds. Before I was expecting it, the forest began to thin, and I knew I would soon be able to see the first little houses of the reservation. Walking away along the left side of the road was a tall boy with a baseball cap. My breath caught for just a moment in my throat, hopeful that luck was with me for once and I'd stumbled across Jacob without hardly trying. But this boy was too wide, and the hair was short under the hat. Even from behind, I was sure it was Quill, though he looked bigger than the last time I'd seen him. What was with these Quileute boys? Were they feeding them experimental growth hormones? I crossed over to the wrong side of the road to stop next to him. He looked up when the roar of my truck approached. Quill's expression frightened me more than it surprised me. His face was bleak, brooding. His forehead creased with worry.
Oh, hey, Bella,
he greeted me dully.
Hi, Quill. Are you okay?
He stared at me morosely.
Fine. Can I give you a ride somewhere?
I offered.
Sure, I guess, he mumbled.
He shuffled around the front of the truck and opened the passenger door to climb in.
Where to?
My house is on the north side, back behind the store, he told me.
Have you seen Jacob today?
The question burst from me almost before he'd finished speaking. I looked at Quill eagerly, waiting for his answer. He stared out the windshield for a second before he spoke.
From a distance, he finally said.
A distance? I echoed.
I tried to follow them. He was with Embry.
His voice was low, hard to hear over the engine.
I leaned closer. I know they saw me, but they turned and just disappeared into the trees. I don't think they were alone. I think Sam and his crew might have been with them. I've been stumbling around the forest for an hour, yelling for them. I just barely found the road again when you drove up. So Sam did get to him. The words were a little distorted. My teeth were gritted together,